Welcome back, everybody. For this segment of the show, we're going to go to Vancouver, Washington to talk to our longtime friend Jan Kelly, who is an expert in finance and insurance for RV dealerships. She's been on the show before, but lots of things have happened since she was on. So welcome aboard, Jan. Glad to have you back.
Oh, thank you, Greg. It's my pleasure.
My pleasure, too. So why don't you tell us a little bit, how'd you get started here in the RV industry?
Oh, my gosh. You know, RV dealers just kept sending me people to my seminars. And word spread, their productivity did a huge increase. And then, of course, when they're in dealer meetings, they said, wow, you know, what do you attribute the increase in your finance office to? And the dealer said, I sent it to somebody named Kelly. Here's the 800 number. So the dealers, when I got started in the business, they really didn't know if I was male or female or dragon or a horse or what it was. They just knew that they called that 800 number, got a schedule, sent somebody, and their finance manager came back, you know, energized with new techniques and skills that they could use right out of the gate.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. And with every success they had, they went back to the manual and got a few more and tried a few more things. And their numbers kept going up and up. And here we are.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You've been doing this for quite a while, a number of years, and have a pretty good reputation, a very good reputation, I guess, within the RV industry. I know you've been speaking at the RVDA our association conventions for a couple of years, maybe not so much in recent years, but you've been around a while, and you've seen a lot of changes. Has anything changed in the last couple of months for finance and insurance that dealers need to be aware of?
Well, the Military Lending Act certainly is front and center as far as the new changes, but that came out in 2006. But in December, the Department of Defense put out an opinion, and boy, that created a lot of stir within the industry.
What was that opinion?
And it really boils down to four things that the dealers need to pay attention to. And number one is they have to check all of their finance customers against the DOD list, and that's active duty list and dependents. I was talking with a warranty company VP here last week when we were out to dinner in Portland. And, of course, he was making comments about, well, it covers, you know, retired military, too. And I said, no, it's active duty and their dependents. And the dealerships can do that one of two ways. They can check the DOD list via their website. And if anybody needs that website, they can send me an email and request it, and I'll be glad to ship it to them. I mean, it's just a click away for me. And the other thing is that they can sign up with a credit bureau, and the bureaus through Experian can check that same DOD list for a whopping 12 cents a pull.
Mm-hmm.
So they have two ways of doing it. They can make it automated, or they can just mandate that their finance office checks everybody. Now, let's say somebody says that they are on the list and they are active duty or reserve or a dependent. Then, if the dealership sells GAP, then according to Reg Z, GAP is really considered interest. So is credit life and disability.
Mm-hmm.
So the APR has to be Military Lending Act compliant. And I don't think the APR calculations consider GAP and credit insurance as interest, which means the risk contracts or the retail installment sales contracts that we are used to using may not be Military Lending Act compliant.
Mm-hmm.
So the easiest thing is just to tell people don't sell GAP. Well, I think that does the customer a huge disservice. There is a website that the dealers can use to verify if the APR is accurate. And again, for those people who want that information, all they got to do is contact me, and I'll be glad to send it to them.
Okay.
The other couple of things about this that they have to pay attention to, obviously, is the DOD, Department of Defense, does not want any arbitration clause on the retail installment contract. So if there is an arbitration clause, then the dealerships need to use a different contract. That's easy. Mm-hmm. You know, every state's got one. It's either arbitration or no arbitration.
Okay.
And they just need to figure out which one they've been using and what they want to do moving forward.
So what caused the DOD to do all of this? Was there some abuse going on within lending to service members and their dependents?
You know, my gut level tells me yes. Somewhere somebody did something outrageous and they complained to a provost marshal on a base, and the base ranted up the flagpole until the DOD finally got involved in it and said, hey, what's happening? Mm-hmm. That's usually, you know, what starts all of this stuff. But the last thing, Greg, is that the DOD does not want their service members to be charged more than 36% APR.
I cannot imagine
36% on an RV. But I can see where some car dealers would charge that, especially if that service member did not have, you know, a good credit background for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm. That just doesn't make any sense to me, because as a former military member myself, I knew that if we ever fell behind on payments, all the lender or the company would have to do is call up the base and say, hey, Airman Gerber, he isn't making his payments. And I would be in the office getting yelled at from three different directions. And then my pay would be garnished. So I don't even understand why this is a big deal.
Well, I don't know. I don't know for a fact what happened, but, you know, it is suspect that it generated from the car business. And when I talk to RV dealers, frequently they go, well, Jan, we're not like those lion, thieving, snake in the grass car dealers. You know, we're honest working people and blah, blah, blah. And I go, yes, I understand that. The issue is you use the same contracts.
Mm-hmm.
It is the same contract for a Marine, for a RV, for a boat, for a car, for a truck, for an SUV. You're all using retail installment contracts. You're not using necessarily goods and services contracts or a note loan.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, there are different contracts, but generally speaking, that finance manager is writing a retail installment contract. So whatever happens in the auto land area affects RV land.
Mm-hmm.
And the RV dealers just need to understand that. I really don't think anybody charged somebody 36% for an RV. But the DOD said, here's a line in the sand, do not cross it.
Mm-hmm.
So that one, you know, is pretty easy. But the other three, the arbitration, I know there's arbitration clauses on contracts, because when I ask people to bring contracts with them to training, I see it. And I go, here's your arbitration. Read it, understand it, you have to disclose it. And you have to be able to talk about it in English with the consumer.
Right.
And people go, well, I didn't know that was there. And again, it's reading the documents front mm-hmm. and back, all of them, whether it's contract, loan docs, DMV things. The professional finance manager needs to read every form and understand everything about it. If they don't understand it, then they need to ask.
That raises another question for me, Jan, because there's a new practice, I guess, in RV lending that says when the people come in to sign on the dotted line, they are signing that they have read the entire documents front and center, and they've read the owner's manual, and they agree to comply with all of this stuff. And it's only after they've signed the documents that they're presented with them. So how does that work?
Well, they should. Do you notice how I say should?
Yes.
In a full disclosure, full transparency transaction, the finance manager should go over that retail installment contract and pull the customer's copy out and secure separate signatures on it.
Mm-hmm.
And with the laser printed contracts, that's real easy because they're not NCR, so the guy has to sign all the copies anyways. But the finance manager needs to go through that entire contract. This is how we get to the payment. you know, this here is where your gap is. This is where your service contract is. This is the coach and the accessories, and this is, they go line by line by line. They just don't say, here's your payment, and here's your interest, and here's your total payments and total cost of everything, including your down payment. They need to go through all of that breakdown. And then if there's an arbitration clause in the contract, they need to disclose that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the factory warranty booklets, I've only seen one person in almost 30 years read all the factory warranty booklets before they decided to buy.
Mm-hmm.
Most of those are fairly standard. So I recommend that the finance people make copies of the factory deck pages. I call them deck pages. They might call them something else, but that's one or two or three or four pages that says, this is what the factory covers. It covers manufacturer defects against materials and workmanship for a period of 1 year or 2 years with KZ. I think it's 2 years with KZ. They all will say, this is what we cover, and then they have the exclusions. This mm-hmm. is what we do not cover. And, you know, that's the outside, that's the graphics, that's stains from, you know, wear and tear on the inside. But that's a good transition for them in their presentation to say, that's why we, you know, advocate our customers invest in protective coatings
mm-hmm.
to cover the interior of the coach and the exterior. And you've got a written guarantee from this company that if any of these things happen, they'll take care of it.
That's a good point.
So you can use those deck pages as a jumping off point, to talk about a service contract, to talk about prepaid maintenance, to talk about, you know, protective coatings. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a perfect reason on why the dealership sell it.
Sure. Have you noticed an increase in the number of people paying cash for RVs?
Yes. Yes. And the code is cash to you. So the finance managers really need to learn how to do cash conversions effectively. I personally like the HV12C method. We've got tremendous success with people using that. Yes, it's math. Yes, it's showing them things. Yes, you got to go to bankrate.com to get the 5-year CD rate, the most current rate. And if you take those 2 minutes, it is possible to have a 70% take rate on cash deals, but it's going to take you some extra time. Not just people standing in the door. You're going to need to get their attention and go through it with them. You can either do the examples and email it to the customer, especially if the customer bought the unit online or if they close the deal on the telephone. And more people are doing that. They are shopping online, so they're coming through a virtual door in your showroom rather than the real hard brick-and-mortar door, which means finance needs to be trained to reach out and sell their goods and services on a phone, maybe a GoToMeeting so people can see what's on their computer. And they're going to need to sell that rate because the word, gee, I don't know what the rate is until you come in, that dog has no legs anymore.
Mm-hmm.
People are shopping on their smartphone for a rate.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And if they're out shopping, they're not going to, and they find a rate that they think that it is pretty good, they're just going to go with it. They're not even going to check with the dealership because they'll assume that it might be higher.
That is true. So the finance people need to switch the conversation from rate to collateral.
Mm-hmm.
What is the collateral when somebody chooses to go to a credit union? Well, they pledge all shares, payment on shares that they now have or hereafter may have in the credit union. And I'm saying that from memory. That's how long I've been reading those clauses.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not necessarily on their contract. That is part of their truth in lending disclosures, that's part of their credit app. So when people say, well, gee, that's not on my contract, they're right. It's not on the contract.
Mm-hmm.
On their credit application that where they applied for the loan. And conversely, Greg, if that customer walks into a bank, on their own volition, the bank of what's happening now, and signs the loan there, then they are granting that bank the right of set off, which means the same thing. The bank can set off the funds in those accounts to help pay for the loan if the bank is in fear of getting repaid. And people will, when I talk to folks and finance managers, they go, oh, well, I don't think that's true. So then I start bringing out my proof statements. Here, read it and weep. You know, this is on page 36. This is on page 65. It's really front and center, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And they just look at me and I go, well, when you open up a checking account or a savings account, the bank gives you a booklet of the terms and conditions of deposit accounts. Who reads that?
Right.
But that's exactly where it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they've already given permission for the bank to do that. They don't have to put it on the contract.
Okay.
And even USAA, the company that we all love, they have a right to set up on the back of their contract because they're a bank.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so dealers need to be aware of this.
Well, sure. And they need to get copies of this and put it in a little book. And so they can say, look, Mr. Customer, before I cash this check you're handing me, here, look at what you're giving these people. Because they can turn around and send that check back, and that loan will be completely paid for, and it's null and void.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it could still give the dealership an opportunity to finance. But if the finance people don't know the facts, they don't know how to present them to where the customer doesn't lose face. You know, it's just a matter of the finance people turning into cashiers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
and we don't want that.
Right. No, that's a very important consideration. In addition to cash purchases, I imagine that more and more dealers are seeing business coming in through the web.
Yes.
Is that some special consideration there for F&I managers as well?
You know, I was just talking to a general sales manager yesterday, and over the past 5 years, his business has changed from 60% of his business coming into the door for the first time to the dealership to now 60% of his sales are coming through the web.
Wow.
So that's what I call those deals are coming through a virtual showroom.
Mm-hmm.
So people are shopping for units online, or they go to a show and then they go online to find the best deal after they find the unit that they want. And they're still coming and going great distances. And one of the concerns for new dealers is, golly, do I have lenders that will finance my customers who live in a different state?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes these dealers go, well, Jan, I need to have, you know, national lenders. I go, well, yeah, but they'll loan money for the people in your state. He goes, oh, no, we want a local bank and a local credit union for those people. And I went, you need a variety of lenders because everybody has a different wheelhouse and a different criteria that they're going to loan money on. So it's really important that the finance manager, of course, has an A lender and has a couple of B lenders and then, you know, the C lenders and then, you know, one or two that I call a breath above dead lenders. And the lenders all have a purpose. And if you have a good variety, then you can service a wide credit spectrum of customers.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's important.
Yeah, do the banks and lenders make it difficult for dealers to amass a wide variety of people like that? Because with sweetheart deals and things like that, they are expecting the dealers send them all their business?
Well, of course, lenders always want as many deals as you can get, but they also operate on a look-to-book ratio. And even though the lenders will be happy with a 20%, they really want a 40% look-to-book ratio. So if that deal structure and the customer's credit criteria does not even come close to what they look at, then the finance manager is just wasting their time sending it to a bank.
Right.
It's kind of like if a bank has, they say, we don't look at anything below 700. and you got a customer with a 680 score, they're not going to look at it.
Right.
And you're just wasted their time, wasted your time, and you could have been getting it bought elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
So the finance managers need to know their bank buy rate sheets inside and out. They need to live with them. They need to be able to recite them. So when they're looking at the credit history of the customer, the score, the situation, the down payment, you know, voila, you've got some avenues. Mm-hmm. I had a Marine brand new finance manager leave me a voicemail message a week before last. And she goes, Jan, I have this young customer with three small pieces of credit. Where can I get them financed? Well, Greg, here's the thing. I had no idea about the down payment, no idea about what those three pieces of credit were, no idea what the score was, no idea what the balance of the loan was as it pertains to the invoice, all right? So I didn't know if they were in line or over advanced. So I sent her back this long email going, okay, your message was a little confusing. here you go. My two cents. Do you have a co-buyer? How much down payment do you have? I mean, because let's face it, with enough down payment, the lenders can become very nearsighted.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, if they only got 10% down and they got skinny credit and you're over advanced, you're kind of out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying your mainstream lenders, that's not going to work. Now you need to say, okay, what kind of credit unions do we have that she might be a member of? I'm talking she being the customer, of course.
Right. Or what what kind of credit unions she might not be a member of, but are open to giving loans to people who are not members.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And this new finance manager is too busy to come to training. So, voila. And she's too busy to answer a phone call.
That leads me
call me back.
Leads me to another important consideration. I think that the finance manager is probably the most important position at a dealership because of the legal requirements that go into financing deals. And if a deal goes south, it really impacts the dealership. But I don't know if a lot of finance managers really see it that way, or even dealers for that matter. How important is training and ongoing training, not just one and done, but every year, a couple times a year, getting in there to be refreshed by all these requirements?
Critical. If a finance office is not run properly, they can put a dealership out of trust.
Mm-hmm.
And it can happen quickly, and that means everybody loses their job. Everyone.
And all the units are repossessed and everything else, right?
I've seen dealerships over the years to where they would not send people to training, or they just sent them to their warranty school training thinking that was good enough. And, you know, it was kind of odd because the GSM that I spoke to the other day, he goes, well, Jan, I assume you're like all the other trainers. You only train 3 hours, have lunch, and come back and train for 3 hours. And I said, oh, no, sir. I start at 8 o'clock. You're going to send us a sandwich. We're going to have a lunch half hour, and then we're going to run again until you close the doors.
Mm-hmm.
And be careful you don't lock me in, because I've been locked into dealerships before. I don't know who they're doing, only 3 hours and then an hour and a half for lunch and then 3 hours. But mm-hmm. I go all day. And I tell them they got homework to do. So I start early and I end late.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because of the volume of information I need to convey to these people in a short amount of time. Do they leave me looking like a deer in the headlights? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But then when something happens in their office, woohoo, the mm-hmm. light bulb comes on and they know what to do.
Right.
They don't realize they know what to do or how they know what to do, but that knowledge is there. So I think you're right. The people have to get out of the dealership and they have to learn process-based training with compliance. And because cash conversions has become so time consuming in my schools, I decided to move the compliance to an extra day, and people who need compliance training can pay extra for it. Our typical school is 3 days, Tuesday through Thursday, and those dates can be seen on our website, www.jlkelly.com, and then look at the compliance workshops, and that's on Friday. So the people are already there with me. It's paying a little bit extra and giving it to me for one extra day, and that day is strictly compliance.
Okay. And that's
when I did that, that gave me more time for the cash conversions.
Mm-hmm. Well, not just cash conversions. There are other things besides compliance that the sales managers need to look at. In fact, one of the cool new CDs that I see you're offering on your website is one about found income, letting them know where dealers can make more money. And I think that everybody should be interested in that.
Well, found income is F&I.
Mm-hmm.
Years and years ago, F&I was just viewed as a secretarial position, not sales. But if you think about it, the finance manager sells financing, and they sell the rate to the customer. And so with that, the dealership makes participation or reserve. And then came along service contracts. Well, service contracts build your service department. I know a lot of the dealers will shake their head and go, gee whiz, I don't really know how that works. Well, it's the sales department that sells the family the first unit, always. But it's your parts and service that sells that family the second and the third and the fourth unit. They keep them in your dealership family. So whenever they do want to upgrade that unit, they'll come to you to think about it first and to go shopping first.
Mm-hmm.
And it's up to your sales department again. That service agreement drives that customer to your shop. Yes, it's good at any licensed mechanic across the U.S. and Canada, typically. That's if they're traveling. But what if they're not traveling and they just need to get something fixed before they go on the road?
Mm-hmm.
They will come to your service department because they know you, like you, and trust you. The service agreement is just an opportunity to help them pay for that bill if the part is a covered part.
Mm-hmm.
So service contracts came out. And then after that, then it was credit insurance. Well, you know, it had its heyday, and then the Department of Insurance pretty much ran that in the ground because they raised the rates and lowered the commission in many states. And when they did that, protective coatings took over.
Mm-hmm.
And let's face it, we only have so much money that bank's going to loan. So if we're going to raise that loan balance, $1,000, we can do it either with credit insurance or we can do it with protective coatings. If we do it with credit insurance, we'll make a whopping $200 on average.
Mm-hmm.
If we do it on tank guard and fiber guard for the same $1,000, we can make about $700.
Oh, my.
Woo-hoo.
Mm-hmm.
So, my friend, math kind of speaks, doesn't it?
It sure does. Yeah. And now with your
that's how come paint guard and fiber guard got such a good boost. And it's because it took the place of credit insurance as far as the money goes.
Mm-hmm. Now, with your really redesigned website, you have a lot of different resources that you make available. Why don't you tell us a little bit about some of them?
Well, we had to rebuild a website, and in doing so, we have live seminars, which everyone is used to. That's where you send them to me, and I'm in front of them for 3 days or so. We also have webinars scheduled throughout the year that people can be online with me and ask me questions in real time. But I started recording those webinars, and they're on video on demand. So if a person says, well, holy cow, that's really early in the morning, and I can't be there because normally I do the webinars at either 7 in the morning. Sometimes I do them 6 in the morning, West Coast time. It depends on who I'm doing them for. And sometimes I do them at 9. It kind of depends. They can buy the session they want, and they can listen to it. Now, according to my programmers, and I don't always understand all of this, but if they buy a session, they have a year to complete listening to it. Because I asked them, I said, okay, sometimes people get interrupted with phone calls or a deal or something. Can they go back and pick it up where they left off? And they go, oh, yeah, Jan, they got a year, so they can listen to it over and over again. But at the end of the year, their access to it disappears. So I'm thinking that's pretty good.
I think that's a bargain. Absolutely. So not only can they listen to it once, they can go back every quarter and listen to it to kind of refresh themselves and think of the things that they missed the last time because they were focused on something else that they thought was more important. That's a great idea.
Yes, and we charge them per computer hookup. You know, so if everybody wants to huddle around one computer and watch one screen, great. If they want everyone to be able to watch it at home on their leisure, then it's going to be billed one thing at a time. The other change in the website is they can pay for it via credit card, and I never get their credit card information because it's through a company called Stripe. And that is supposed to be more secure than PayPal.
Mm-hmm.
And so they pay for it. I just get an invoice, and a couple days later, the money shows up in the checking account. So that's definitely an improvement. So the CDs are on, they've got streaming ability, and that's the same thing. They can buy them, and it streams.
Mm-hmm.
That's not that I understand how that works, but that's what the programmers are telling me.
Exactly.
So I don't have to produce CDs, and I don't have to ship them, and I don't have to worry about them being shipped. I don't have to worry about them going through customs in Canada. Again, people can pay for them, and they can stream them at their convenience.
Good idea. But you're still doing 20 groups?
I do still have an F&I RV 20 group, and we're growing. We're accepting applications all the time, and when that group gets filled, we'll start another one. And that is a huge resource for these finance managers. It's a once-a-month conference call. Once a year, we get together for 2 days. When the group gets to be 16 or 17 members, then we really should meet twice a year. But for right now, it's just once a year because we don't want to take them out of the dealership any longer than necessary. That's why the face-to-face meetings usually take place in December. That's when it's slow and they're not going to be missed too much in the dealership.
Mm-hmm.
But they learn skills. And in that face-to-face meeting, we always have a lender panel. Different lenders show up. That gives the finance managers an opportunity to ask the lenders, what are the differences in credit? And what are the changes? What are the things we need to be prepared for? How can we make the decisions faster? How can we make funding faster? And they get to hear it straight from the lenders, not just a trainer. I mean, these are the people that fund their contracts.
Mm-hmm. Now, are they...
Great resource.
Yeah. Are the 20 groups done online, or are they meeting at specific dealerships or meeting at your office?
Well, we meet at a dealership. We're just little finance managers. We have to watch our pennies. So since the costs are divided up amongst the members, I try to be mindful of that. So we try to do meetings on the cheap, and that means we take over a dealership's meeting room. Everybody buys their own lunch, and then we have a group dinner, and everyone buys their own dinner. And, that way the meeting, they're only paying for my travel time and my hotel room and a rental car because I get a car that's big enough to haul more than me.
Right.
And we all kind of meet up at an airport, and then I act as the Uber driver.
Mm-hmm.
Get them to where we need to be.
Sure. Now, if you wanted to do a seminar, a live seminar, is this something that like state association would set up for you, or would a specific dealer want to contract with you to do a webinar or a seminar right there on their location?
Well, they can, all right. And I have done webinars for the Pennsylvania Association, Campground and RV Association, and that worked out really well. We did it on a Monday, every Monday morning for 10 weeks. I mean, the people registered by Friday over the weekend. I sent them all the handouts, and then Monday morning they chimed in and got an hour's worth of education. And the people who participated in that really seemed to like it. So, yes, the associations can hire me to do that. If they want me to do a live seminar for their members, yes, they can hire me to do that. And if the dealers just want to come to one of our scheduled ones in Portland, Oregon, then those dates are online. And our next seminar is going to be April 17th, 18th, and 19th in Portland, Oregon.
Good timing.
So there's lots of different training venues that they can utilize.
That's great. So if people wanted more information about how to get in touch with you or take advantage of some of these training opportunities, how do they do it?
Well, they can either call my 800 number, which is 800-336-4275, or they can send me an email. And that's jan@jlkelly.com, or they could visit the website and click on sales or info at jlkelly.com. It all comes to me.
That's great. Well, lots of things happening here, Jan. I really appreciate you taking time to talk to us about it. I love the new website. That's just a lot of information packed in there. A good job to your developers for putting that together. And
thank you very much. I'm really excited about it.
And thank you for updating us on all of these interesting new laws and rules and regulations, and I just hope people reach out and contact you, because this is just a scratch in the bucket here. I mean, people really need to sit down and talk with you at length to fully understand all of this.
Well, I'm here to serve the industry, and I do hope they pick up the phone or go online and reach out to me, because I love the RV industry. I think that's rather obvious, and I love the finance office.
Super.
And as you know, The thing that differentiates me from somebody else is that I don't sell any product. So my total focus is on making that finance manager have their productivity increase and for them to do it in an honest, ethical manner.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Thank you again, Jan. I appreciate the time.
Thank you, Greg.